Hello and welcome to everyone. I'm Fiona Nowling, and with me in the studio is my wife, and also on the soundboard with her is Angela Belize.
Hello world.
Hey, I was cut off, so I get to say hello again.
That's my wife. Two hellos. How many goodbyes?
Oh, let's not talk about that on the radio.
A million.
So sorted and
and that was Anthony introducing himself.
Hello.
And with us in the studio today, we have four guests from Five Rings Fencing. And they're great personal friends of ours, and we have actually fenced with them for about 8 years now. And we have Samantha Herdman.
Hello.
And she coaches with Five Rings. We have Lisa Inman.
Hello.
And she mostly fences épée. And we have Mark Wickersham, swordmaster and general leader and instructor and raconteur of note.
Good afternoon.
And also we have Kim Rep, who is the Minion General or General Minion.
Good morning.
She's a little behind the time. So welcome everyone to the show. Mark, would you like to start with a little bit of the history of women in fencing?
Yes. Well, going before the era of sport fencing, which started in the United States in the 1890s with the establishment of the American Fencing League, there were, in fact, women handling swords all through history, oftentimes clandestinely. Una is, in fact, a bit of an expert at this, having studied it a great deal herself. But there were women in the 18th century, one in particular that I'm thinking of, but at my age and on the radio, I can't think of her name offhand. But she, perhaps Una could.
Hagarina?
No, that was 19th century.
Oh, I thought it was 1890s.
In 18th century. And she was covertly trained by her fencing master. They were lovers. And he, in fact, lost a duel, and then she stepped up and dueled in his place. And in the 19th century, you mentioned, not sure of the pronunciation, Jaguarina. She studied under a great American, military trainer, also adventurer and mercenary. But he taught, back in the days, fencing masters were masters of arms. He also taught boxing and other things. And she did a number of demonstrations all over the United States and won a good many bouts. But fencing became more and more of a sport as time progressed. And by the 1890s and the beginning of the first Olympic movement, there became a governing body for American fencing that was part of it. And that was the Amateur Fencing League of America. However, they didn't officially allow women to compete in foil until about 1912, when Dr. Adelaide Bayliss, a doctor in 1912, became the first women's national champion in foil. And there are two other weapons in sport fencing, although many, many weapons historically. And the two other weapons are the épée, which arguably the foil was always meant to be a training weapon for, and the saber, which was the cut-and-thrust military weapon, like Marsden would have used. Anyway, and while there are records on champions for these going back to the 1890s for the men, for the women, while there were women who fenced at Bay, I know in the 1970s, because one of them was my instructor, Dr. Mary Elliott. In fact, she introduced me to the other coaches that took over my training. But they weren't allowed to fence officially in a national championship until 1981 in the APE, and until 1998 in the Sabre. And in fact, that first APE women's champion, Susan Jane Batters, I don't know very much about. I only heard Mary talking about her because Mary was in the final round of eight with her. But in 1998, even though there had been a demonstration at the Nationals in 1981 that Mary fenced in 1998 it became official. And the first official U.S. national champion is another local coach. Her name is Kelly Williams. Now, oddly enough, although, you know, we had the saber added and suddenly women were able to fence all three weapons by 1998, it wasn't until 2004 that finally women were allowed to fence all three weapons in the Olympics. So we sort of led the world a little bit in this. And that first champion in 2004 was an American in Sabre.
That's excellent. What I think is interesting is that a lot of people would not have thought that women would be fencing at all back in the early 1900s, because people would think it wasn't genteel enough and proper decorum for women at the time.
The old pictures are fascinating. Fencing skirts. They were wearing fencing skirts. That got relaxed within 30 years, but it's interesting.
Well, I know from my studies that young women were originally often sent to fencing school because of some of the benefits of fencing that you learn during training. I know, for instance, that when we started to enter an era of fashion modeling for even in the 1910s and 1920s, that one of the things they wanted to teach the models was how to have proper poise, how to have balance, how to be able to know how to move their mass rather than let their mass move them. And fencing has tremendous benefits for that, does it not?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why Hollywood, fairly early on, began training women as well as men in fencing. Even if the women weren't going to be handling the swords in the movies, and sometimes they did, the benefits were there. And at the same time, Dr. Naismith and others of his age recognized that the benefits of physical culture, and fencing was a part of pretty much the standard gymnasium curriculum.
Now, you mean Dr. James Naismith, who we often associate with basketball?
Oh, yes, he was a fencing master first.
Really? That's, I think a lot of people out there wouldn't know that, as even the Jayhawks out there.
Well, I try to tell as many as I can. I have one of his sabers, in fact, dating from about 1908.
Wow, that is incredible. What I wonder if you could describe for our audience just pretty quickly, what is fencing, though? Because we kind of jumped on in, and there's some people out there that really may not know what fencing is at heart.
It's the art of giving without receiving. Ideally, it is better to give than to receive, and in this case, the giving consists of the use of a sword for both defense and offense. Swordsmanship is when you use a sword in any capacity. If you're wearing armor, you don't need to use the sword to defend yourself. That's what the armor's for. But if you're not wearing armor, then touching without being touched is the idea. So you must use the sword defensively. Fencing should be spelled with an apostrophe in the front.
You mentioned under armor, and I mean, I know I see the white, what do you call it?
Well, it's just a fencing jacket, fencing uniform. The fencing uniform is not what I was referring to as armor, even though it sort of is. The uniform is made out of, the jacket is made out of material that has to pass certain penetration tests to make sure that a broken blade is not likely to go through them. Same way with the mask and now the glove. Used to be we didn't care about gloves. It was your own problem if your hand got hurt. But so there is indeed armor worn underneath the uniform too. But we treat the sword as if we're not wearing armor in the sport of fencing.
That is awesome. I was wondering about how much padding was under the uniform. So that's great information to give out.
Hi. So, yeah. So when you're fencing, you're actually getting hit by the sword. So you have to have protection. It doesn't look like you're wearing that much. But like Mark said, we wear rated for puncture protection jacket and knickers. Underneath that, there's another layer to protect your underarm. Because if you get hit in the armpit, that would be really bad. So there is an extra layer there. And then women wear a chest protector just to protect the breasts and make sure everything stays good. That means you can get hit really hard in the chest and you're fine.
That's important. That was Coach Samantha, by the way. And the plastic chest protector is not optional for women. They're required to wear it in competition because experience has shown that repeated hits in the same spot over and over again can produce cumulative damage that needs to be mitigated. I like to say the swords are blunt, but the bruises are real.
And even with the protection, you do get some bruising, but it's not bad.
I still have the bruise you gave me in an épée match from last Wednesday when we fenced.
Do you need to have it autographed?
Well, it's been around for 10 days, so I don't know. I might have to name it after a while.
It was a sore loser.
It was very visible when she went out to the club the other night.
One should be thankful for one's gifts.
Fencers do occasionally show off their bruises. It's a mark of honor sometimes.
And it can also cause interesting discussions when you go to visit the doctor, when you're covered in bruises all over your arms that aren't all that visible most of the time.
When I go to the doctor, when a new doctor especially, one of the first things I have to do as a fencer is explain, yes, I am a fencer. And that's why I have these bruises. Look, they're only on one side of my body. So, and then because the épée tip is about the size of a finger, it's always a fun discussion.
So on that subject, it sounds like to listeners out there that fencing might be kind of a dangerous sport, you know, because after all, parents are thinking like, well, my daughter wants to take up fencing, but she's going to be having a sword and people are going to be chopping at her. It's going to be like Conan the Barbarian. Isn't she going to get hurt?
Well, I have a quick statement on that subject. Insurers, the folks that underwrite the insurance for fencing, put us in the same risk league as ballroom dance.
Really?
Yes, really.
Oh. Well, people do wear heels while ballroom dancing.
Also as rhythmic aerobics. So there have been injuries over the course of the history of sport fencing from 1898 to today, but there just haven't been that many in terms of of relative safety, one weekend of high school football generates more and more serious injuries than the entire history of sport fencing.
In fencing, most of the injuries are actually a lot like soccer, in that we get knee injuries. We do get some elbow occasionally, but it's mostly knee and an Achilles tendon.
More like hyperextensions or something.
Right, or if you get too much torque.
Injuries.
Yeah.
Repetitive stress injuries are what I've suffered the most in fencing.
Mm-hmm. Strains and sprains are certainly possible.
And when we talked about those fencing jackets having a puncture rating, that's the sport of fencing is very responsive to danger. So when there is an incident, we tend to look for ways to mitigate that risk. So whenever you compete, your equipment has to be checked to make sure it's safe, because it's no fun breaking your friends. We're here to have a sport and have fun, and we fence each other because we enjoy it.
I believe when I did the research on this a while ago that there's actually never been a case of a sport fencer dying in the United States over 100 years.
In the United States, that's true.
Whereas every year, I believe I read that somewhere between 70 to 90 children die from Pee Wee League and up football every year. So when you compare the odds, it's really just, there's no comparison in safety.
It's like fencing is being poked by a blunt object multiple times, and there's no chance of really breaking your arm like my cousin.
Unless you fall.
Yeah, if you do something daft enough, I'm sure you can manage to break your arm. You have to put a lot of effort into it, though.
There was a case in the United States, as I remember, but it wasn't chalked up as a fencing death. There was a competitor who, as he got on the strip, he was a medical doctor in his 70s, and as he got up on the strip, he looked at the director and said, "I'm having a heart attack." And he took his pulse, and he said, "Call the morgue."
Yeah, that's not a fencing
accident. That's not a fencing accident.
Although, without the stress and excitement from the match, he might have made it another couple of days. So, dragging it from such a depressing topic back to the subject of women in fencing. And we have three women fencers in the studio with us today. So, Samantha, why don't you tell us how you got interested in fencing and involved with Five Rings?
Well, I really hadn't known much about fencing until I just started hanging around fencers. And because I had friends who were fencing.
I was wondering how you just hang around fencers. I mean, I've fallen in with authors by accident and other bad crowds. But
some people are more talented. But then one of my friends decided she wanted to learn to coach, and she needed a student. And since I was hanging around anyway, I volunteered, figured, okay, it'd be fun. And I got bit by the bug, and I've been fencing now for about 17 years. And it's been a blast. I hope to keep going for at least that long again.
How old is the oldest fencer, and how young are the youngest fencers, you know, thinking of keeping going for a long time?
Well, that's one of the great things about fencing, is it really is a lifetime sport. So you can start as a kid. We have them start as young as 6. But I have friends who are in their mid to late 70s and even 80 and older, who are still competing nationally and internationally. I'm currently competing in the 50 and up age range, and it is fiercely competitive with people from all over the country. Never underestimate your grandma. So that's one of the great things. As long as you can keep yourself healthy, it keeps you moving, it helps with your balance. It helps with your core strength. It helps with coordination. It makes you think on your feet, literally. It's just a great sport.
Yeah, recent studies have said that the number of falls someone has in a year is a good predictor of upcoming mortality rates. So something like fencing that helps teach balance and mental agility might be a good way to offset that risk.
Yes, I don't know if it's correlation or simple or causation, but yes, the balance is important. And just flat keeping moving, staying active. And it's a great way to interact with people your own age.
Yeah, I found when I started wearing a step tracker that I tended to cover quite a lot of steps on the piece, even while it's just short backwards and forwards bits and you're only up for a short amount of time. It certainly accumulates. But because you're fighting people and then you're talking to your friends and practicing together, it doesn't feel like you're going out and exercising. To me, it felt a lot more. You end up with having to wash the sweaty T-shirt afterwards and
yes.
stuff, but it's not the same. It doesn't have that grind feel of going.
It doesn't feel like working.
Yes,
it's playing.
Yes,
yes.
I can attest as a. This is Kim. I can attest that as a non-athletic person, fencing is very good for your joints. Before I started fencing, I had a doctor tell me that my knees were such that they would probably need surgery. But with fencing, that actually has improved the joints. It's improved the balance. I don't think I've fallen down a flight of stairs in 6 years. That's a good thing. I used to do that regularly. Not as a hobby, but just kind of happened that way. So, and I am, let's see, how old am I? I'm 48. So, and I just recently came into fencing in the last 7 years. So this is something you can pick up. You don't have to be a young teenager. You don't have to start as a child. You're not going to have somebody at 48 start football. You're not going to have, even as a woman, usually you don't start soccer at the age of 48. But you can start fencing in your 40s. And you can, I don't do it to compete, but I do know lots of people like Sam who are competing at that age. So that's another thing for anyone that wants to do exercise. It's also good if you work in a cubicle all day. It's always nice to poke people when you get done with the day.
One of our coaches, I think it was probably Mark, remarked that fencing is known as chess at 800 calories an hour. And it certainly feels like that if you're doing several bouts in a row. I only started fencing about 5 years ago. I had wanted to do it 20 years ago, but had never been in a place where there was a club or had the disposable income to take it up. But when I moved to Kansas City, I said, I bet there's fencing here. And I went looking for it and found it. And honestly, it's just the best sport ever. It's so much fun.
I know. I personally started it in, given how old I am, probably very late 30s. And I talked my wife into trying it as well. I'd wanted to try it as a child, but schedules and stuff at school meant I couldn't take it up myself. And then horrible teenage thing, my mother the next year said I could do fencing if I wanted. And I was like, but I'll have to start with the first years. Now, of course, those first years, if they're still going, have had like 20, 30 years extra experience on top of what I've got, but did come to it late, but did get to enjoy it. And we're going to be taking a short station break here, but then when we come back, we'll be talking about having more fun, running with weapons and hitting your friends, all the things that your mother told you not to do.
And welcome back to Every Woman, where we are in the studio live with members of Five Rings Fencing who are actually doing a little bit of sword fighting right here in the studio, doing a practice drill with old-style cavalry sabers. And so if it sounds like... So if it sounds like your neighbor's going nuts with a sheet metal hammer, that's kind of what it... So one of the things that got me interested in fencing was because I had never been able to compete at many sports, being much smaller and having a lot of trouble building any sort of muscle mass on myself. And I wanted a sport that I could actually have a chance at competing against, all sorts of folks. Many people say, well, in any sport, women have no chance of competing with the men, even at the very lowest levels. But that's not really true in fencing. I mean, I know there's differences when you get to the international and Olympic level, but at least in the local level, women are highly competitive at fencing, are they not?
All shapes, all sizes of people. You know, when I was at the Olympic Training Center training, you would see people come in to work on, like, volleyball, something like that. By the third week, the ones that were left all looked identical. They were all exactly the same height and weight. But fencers, all shapes and sizes. And also differently abled people, too. We also teach chair fencing in the club. I've had a number of chair fencers, wheelchair users, learn to fence over the years. I've had fencers that were not sighted learn to fence. So it really is a very, very inclusive sport. One of the things I like about fencing for women is that it allows them to embrace a level of aggression that society may not have approved of at one point.
It's really satisfying. So when we're fencing locally and regionally, we get to fence in a mixed gender event. As a woman over 50, getting to fence a 16-year-old boy is immensely satisfying.
Especially if you hand him his.
That's the best part, yes. If I can beat him, that's always sweet.
Yes.
The other thing about wheelchair fencing is it's not just the fact that you can fence in a wheelchair, but you can fence in international competition in wheelchair fencing. And it's its own kind of fencing, and it's very difficult, and it's amazing to watch.
And the little demonstration that you heard the clashing of before, both parties were actually seated for that.
The ceiling's a little bit short here.
didn't want to hit the ceiling.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'd like to mention about the aggression that you had talked about is that everyone's always talking about, oh, women should be more assertive, or it's okay for women to be assertive. But what people don't realize is it's really, really, really difficult to be assertive if you have all this pent-up aggression at all of these people telling you what you can and can't do.
Yeah, your assertion may go slightly over that. So, like Lisa mentioned earlier about how good it can be after being in the cubicle all day to go and stab things. Sorry, Kim? Said that? Sorry. Lisa is obviously a less stabby person.
I don't know about that.
Less willing to talk about stabbing people on air, perhaps.
But it's nice to have a controlled way to use that aggression.
Yes.
So I have a question for our listeners. What are the three different disciplines? I heard the words mentioned earlier, sabre, épée, and foil. So explain those differences to our listeners, if you would.
So there are three sport fencing weapons. Foil, which is you hit just with a point. Épée is also a point weapon, but in foil you have a limited target area, so you have to hit a specific point on the body to score. In épée, you can hit anywhere on the body. And then saber, which you can hit with the edge or the point, so that's the nice slashy one. That's also one, if you've seen any Olympic fencing over the last two cycles, you might have seen some U.S. female fencing saber champions. They've been doing quite well over the last few years.
Because the U.S. embraced saber for women earlier than the rest of the world, when the rest of the world finally embraced it, we had this pre-made cadre.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say a mature program. So yeah. You've got experienced coaches as well as experienced people coming up through the ranks.
Right.
Is there a favorite out of you all, the saber, the épée, or the foil?
That's a constant source of discussion among fencers.
I like the épée. I'm just going to throw it out there.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Épée is my weapon. But it's a friendly competition. There are people who fence multiple weapons or people who fence all three weapons.
There's people who constantly disfoil as being stupid and over-constrained,
no.
And I'm not looking at anyone here because I don't have a mirror.
So. Una and Fiona actually fence a wicked game of 18th century court sword.
But that's not sport.
What is that?
Well, that's a historical weapon. That's basically the descendant of the rapier. So it got shorter and lighter and became a stabbing weapon only. But no gentleman, and back then it was gentleman, would be seen on the street without one. It was a piece of jewelry that also happened to be very deadly. It is a little bit like épée, except done with no rules.
Yeah. Which is saying something.
Yeah, for instance, yes. you can deflect the weapon with your non-weapon hand, or you can disarm your opponent, or in some cases, when both of you make an attack and you pass by each other, Fiona was very fond of using a bit of judo and throwing me onto my rear on the floor, which would normally get a lot of laughter from people.
Yes, especially if it was followed with then using the flat of the blade to beat you.
Another concern.
They are wicked at it. They are very good.
Yes, there can be wrestling. There can be bashing people in the head with the pommel of the sword. All those non-sportsman-like things or non-sportswoman-like things that you shouldn't be doing, which is why regular fencing has so much more rules to stop people from doing things like that and behaving like infants.
So some women won't enter a sport because it seems to be incredibly male dominated. I mean, literally, if a woman out there wants to, say, play tackle football, she's going to have very limited options for venues in Kansas City where she can do that. But there are quite a large number, percentage, of women fencers compared to the total population, aren't there?
There's certainly a lot more organized opportunities for women in fencing. Women have a clear place in fencing. So you have the option of fencing other women. You have the option of fencing in mixed gender events, and women are perfectly well accepted in those as well and are competitive. So,
if I may add one other thing, there's a strong acceptance in the Olympic movement of fencing for transgender fencers. I've had a number of fencers in both my Kansas City and Lawrence program who've been somewhere on the transgender journey. And at this point, the International Olympic Committee has basically said, if a transgendered individual has been on a course of hormone therapy for a year or longer, they're allowed to fence in their stated gender.
And that was something that made it very easy for me because I transitioned from being a, quote, male, unquote, fencer to what I am now. And it was really not much of a difference. I didn't have to suddenly start fencing with a new group. I didn't have to go into a different league. I fenced the same people after my change that I did before my change and was fully accepted. The only difference is I had to start wearing a chest protector, of course, because things grew like they will.
I can say, as a female fencer, that what you wear is not terribly different between men and women. In fact, I wear what's considered a guy's chest protector because I am not as well endowed as some women. And so the more flat surface gives me more protection than, yes, I do have to say the women's chest protector does kind of look like a Barbie. So if you're going for that more, yeah, if you're going for more of a look, you can always wear that other protector. But
well,
I like
provide,
something that just protects.
It does provide sloped armor. Things sort of slide off.
But by the time you're stabbing each other, you don't care what you look like. It's what you can do on the strip that counts.
And with the stabs that don't penetrate, were you going to say something else to that? Fine. With the stabs that don't penetrate, what does the point system go up to? And how do you determine who's the winner? Is it like to 1 to 100? How does that work?
100 touches. Let's spend some time.
I have done that.
But. What a good idea.
So it's a lot like boxing in some ways. We do 3-minute rounds. The 3 minutes go to 5 touches, so whoever scores 5 touches wins that bout. When we get to further along in the tournament process, so we fence these 5-touch bouts to set up a direct elimination tableau, like a basketball tournament. Mm-hmm. So once you get to that point, if you lose, you're done for the day. Those events go to 15 touches with 3 3-minute periods, so it's like doing 3 rounds of boxing. Or to whoever gets to 15 touches first.
You really have to think on your feet, and it sounds like it requires a lot of critical thinking.
It requires thinking and not thinking at the right time. Because once you start fencing, there is no time.
Right.
So as you know, in epee is the only one of the weapons where you can actually have both people score at the same time. So if you hit each other at the same time, and at the same time means within 1/25th of a second, mm-hmm. which isn't a lot of time to think. That's faster than you can actually react. So you have to be moving already.
All right.
I started out learning on foil and then switched to epee, which I found extremely frustrating at first because the geometry required to take someone's blade, and it's the heaviest blade of the sport weapons, it's just very difficult to sort of work out how all of that, just to get those angles correctly. And I hated it first. I thought it was, I'm never going to fence epee, but now that's all I do, pretty much. And I really enjoy it.
Shifting between weapons all the time with the different lengths and weights has to require a particular mindset or mental gymnastics to maintain which rule set you're operating under and where your perspective difference is for target points.
The weapons actually feel very similar, but the rule sets force you to fence very differently depending on which weapon. So, yes, convincing your brain to remember which weapon you're fencing with at any given time is one of the reasons why most people don't fence all 3 weapons.
And a lot of people, since we're talking about epee, think that that's a tall person's game because theoretically with anywhere being target you could just stab someone on the top of the head and stay out of arm's reach if you've got a long enough reach. But there's so many tactical and strategic things that mostly eliminate that advantage.
Yeah,
because a lot of short people at this table. They all fence epee.
And in fact, I was at an event in Cincinnati about 2 weeks ago and talking to my referee, who was a former World Cup team member for his country, and talking about how he had a teammate who was shorter than I am, and I am not very tall at all. I'm under 5'5". And he was the terror of the strip because he could go in. He was fast enough to get in and score touches underneath these very tall epee fencers. So that because there's always another way to do something, you just have to be smart enough to find that way. And that's another fun part of the game.
But you often see it, the veterans, because if someone stayed in the sport that long, they've often may not have the speed anymore, but they're steeped in evil and knowledge. And with that, I'll leave you thinking about evil and knowledge while we take a short station break.
I have a question, which is I'd like to know a little bit about your specific fencing club or organization. You know, what is your philosophy? Where do you meet? Could you describe the fencers, the sort of fencers that fence there, basically?
Well, we call ourselves Five Rings Fencing. It's a bit of a nod to the 5 Olympic rings. It's also a nod to a philosophy of teaching, basically keeping the history of fencing alive as it came down to me from my teachers, which can be traced all the way back to the 1400s. So not just sport, but certainly sport as well. So think of five: historical, classical, theatrical, sport, and world traditions. Think of, just foil épée, saber, rapier, court sword. Those were among some of the first weapons we taught as the club was founded. We've added other things over time.
Right, you even spent time for a couple of months teaching me knife fighting.
I've taught generations of students, military and other agencies, the knife as well, yes. At any rate, it's sport and more. We started outdoors. Then we moved indoors, then we moved outdoors again. But for the last number of years, we've been at Academy Lafayette, who've been wonderful hosts for us. That's at 6903 Oak. And if you want to see the details on that, we are five, spelled out, F-I-V-E, rings, R-I-N-G-S, fencing.org. And so you can get some details from us there. We also meet in Lawrence once a week. I've got an assistant coach who has a program going in Arkansas. I've had coaches that I've taught in Springfield and in Tulsa, but not currently at the moment.
So at the Kansas City over in Brookside, we have fencers there who are from about 6 years old all the way up to over 75, and pretty much everything in between. We have had parents and children fencing at the same time, which is always fun. Moms, remember, it's a good thing to do with your kids. It's a nice shared activity. Imagine how much fun your kid would have fencing you and getting to hit you. It's great.
Or how much fun mom would have walloping the kids.
Well, yeah, bingo. There's that too.
Especially when they hit those teenage years.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we currently fence three nights a week. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and which means we see a lot of each other and we have
a nice time. At what time do you fence?
Oh, we meet at from 6:30 to about 8:30.
So if someone was thinking of trying fencing out, do they have to make a big investment in equipment to come by and see what it's like or anything, or can they just show up and take a look?
If you're interested in fencing, I would encourage you just to show up. Maybe contact us first, so go onto the website. But if you just want to show up, that's great. We love to host visitors and give you some basic introductory work and how it works, so you can decide whether this might be something that's for you. So we encourage you to try it out first before you make any investment. And we have loaner gear, so you don't have to invest in your own equipment to begin with.
I just want to say that's awesome that Five Rings Fencing gives you that introductory before you make the investment. Because Una had just touched on, I was wondering myself, like, would I need to eat more carrots? Do I need to go get a vision test? You know, to make sure I could be in par standards for sparring. Ebony, this sounds really interesting to me. I had never thought about fencing in this capacity before, but with everybody in here, with all their energy that everybody is exchanging, I'm interested in taking some fencing. Is it lessons, classes? What do we call it?
So, well, we take people instead of having formal classes. That would require us to, like, have a fixed start time for, you know, getting a new cohort in. But we take people as they come. So if I get a brand new beginner, they get a lot of individual attention from Sam and I first in order to get them up to speed to where they can start having fun. And then from there, you know, so it's sort of I've always believed in one-on-one instruction.
And helping out new fencers is part of the experience of being a fencer. It helps teach you more about your sport by having to teach it to somebody else. And you get the benefit of helping train up your competition, because if you don't have competition, you can't have anybody to fence. So fencers need friends who can fence.
Anthony, you down to go? We should do this one day. I saw it's on the bus route. I think it's on the bus route. We can make it.
Yeah, I mean, if it's at 69, then isn't there, like, we could just take the 18 to the 63rd Street bus, or we could take the MAX or something. Yeah.
I should warn you that they're a very friendly group, and they always invite people to come out to the pub with them afterwards. So you might need to plan that into the bus routes and for being able to leave to get home.
Well, for Angela. Angela can go.
I will point out that the pub does serve water and soft drinks, and you aren't compelled to drink if just by going out to chat.
I'm just not allowed, you know. So
I can just see Sam looking at me over here like fresh meat.
But in a friendly rather than I'm a shark and going to totally devour you kind of way.
Are you right-handed? Because this club does tend towards the left-handers.
Sinister club.
I believe three of the people at this table are left-handed defensors. I'm the only right-handed one here.
That's a good question. Yeah. Do you have to fence a left-handed person if you're left-handed?
No. Yeah. It does. You can fence either right or left-handed, and when you're fencing here in the U.S., if you're a right-hander fencing a left-hander, it affects which side of the strip you're on so that the director can see the action that's going on. But, yes. And if you look at the top levels of fencing, left-handers are overrepresented. And our club in particular, just historically, has always attracted left-handers. So we have many evenings where we have one or two right-handers.
And if they're not left-handers, they turn them into left-handers.
Because most of the population is actually ambidextrous.
Actually, because some of us are cross-dominant. My eye is a left eye. So, it's easier for me to fence with the left hand, even though I write with the right hand.
So, having just told everyone that you can fence left-handed, right-handed, with anybody's, in any age, any physical ability, could you quickly tell us again how people can find information about your club, if they're interested?
So you can find us on the web. We're at www.fiveringsfencing.org. You can also find us on Facebook, and I think there's a Twitter account as well. But feel free to look up our contact information. We're friendly. We only hit. We don't bite.
So with that, I'd like to thank Five Rings Fencing, Sam, Lisa, Mark, and Kim for joining us today. And I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and Anthony and Angela for co-hosting, Angela and my wife Una for running the soundboard so everyone could actually hear us. And please stay tuned for the next show coming up, which is Urban Connections, and then guess who's coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson. And do stay tuned for another exciting episode of Every Woman next week. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.